Thanks to our beloved on-demand listeners, Issues Etc. consistently ranks among the top podcasts in religion and spirituality. You can help us climb the charts by subscribing, rating, and reviewing Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit the subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for podcast listeners to find Issues Etc. Help us cast Christ's net on the internet. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. today. We have heard a lot about critical theory over the last several years. A set of ideas that started as, well, maybe harmless academic ideas, a way of understanding history. Well, and it also started a little before that with some very harmful ideas, the ideas of Marxism, which are still wreaking havoc in human civilization to this day. So why is it that in a freedom-loving society like America, anyone would even consider reviving the ideas of Marxism and expanding them to apply to every different facet of our society, not just our economy? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to talk about the philosophical roots of critical theory, Dr. Doug Grotheis. He's professor of philosophy at Denver Seminary, and he's author of the forthcoming book, Fire in the Streets, How You Can Confidently Respond to Incendiary Cultural Topics. Dr. Grotheis, welcome back.
Thanks. Happy to be back again.
Give us some examples of how the average person would come in contact with critical theory.
It could certainly happen in a state school. There could be a curriculum that teaches what they call anti-racism, which of course sounds wonderful. It might go into the history of race relations in the U.S., which is good, but the problem with critical race theory, or what is sometimes called the anti-racism perspective, is that it divides people into groups, and it assumes that if you are part of the minority group, let's say African-American, Latino, Latina, you have been oppressed and you are still oppressed by the dominant group, which would be whites and especially white males. So this comes out of Marxism, basically. It's a new twist on Marxism. Marxism talked about the owners and the workers, and the owners oppress the workers, so the workers need to revolt against the owners and redistribute wealth and tear down society before they build it back up again. Well, this view, critical race theory, is a kind of Marxism. It's like a cultural or neo-Marxism, and it looks at matters of race and gender, so it would say also that people who are in sexual minorities have been oppressed and are oppressed. And so you view the world through the lens of the oppressor and the oppressed. And if there's ever any kind of discrepant outcome among racial groups, the idea is that the cause of this has to be racism. So they talk about systemic racism, which is the claim that unequal outcomes are just built into the system, or they sometimes say baked into the system. And the only way to deal with this, even though we've had so much progress for African Americans and others, we've had the civil rights movement and so on, the only way to address these systemic problems is through what they call the enforcement of equity. And equity means that you have outcomes that reflect the proportionate percentage of the population. So let's say if you don't have 13% of all university professors African American, that means that there's systemic racism causing that outcome. And the answer to that is not to make things as fair as possible so that people rise according to their merit, but to actually work the system such that people of color have an intrinsic advantage, and this supposedly will compensate for previous discrimination. So I'm not arguing that racism is non-existent in America or that we don't have a ways to go, but the critical race theory perspective is that any kind of discrepant outcome is due to racism. Racism is baked into the system, and the only way to change things is to fundamentally transform our whole system. So this perspective, for example, is against free speech and against the free market. And they'll say that the whole thing is rigged to benefit the oppressors, meaning mostly the white males. And so those kind of people, the traditional voices, whether it's on the American system or on gender, whatever, need to be shut down. So we don't want an open marketplace of ideas, because these folks will say there's no such thing. And they would go back to a thinker like Herbert Marcuse, who mentored Angela Davis, and Angela Davis mentored the Black Lives Matter leaders, or some of them. And Marcuse said, we can't have tolerance when the whole system is corrupt. He called that repressive tolerance. So what we need to do is value and center these minority voices and give up the idea of an open marketplace of ideas where people can express their views and try to win the argument. Really, for people who imbibe critical race theory, the idea of winning the argument is not something they value, because they think that people on the other side, the oppressors, have disqualified themselves because of their race or because of their gender. And there's no point arguing with someone like that. So they don't support free speech, and they don't support this idea of an open marketplace of ideas. And they think the free market is stacked against people of color also. So they would want to enforce some kind of socialism, some state control, to get what are supposedly fair and just outcomes. So you can see this in education. You can see it in many of the corporations holding this kind of view, telling their workers that the white workers, they have to understand white privilege, that they have all kinds of unearned privileges that they have to feel bad about, and they have to always defer to the perspective of people of color, because those people have been oppressed and are still oppressed, and their viewpoint is simply correct because of their standpoint. This is actually something called standpoint epistemology, which doesn't honor the idea of objective truth or giving reasons and arguments for objective truth, because someone can be part of an oppressed minority, but that doesn't mean their understanding of economics or racism is correct. You've got to make bigger arguments to say something like that. So I've already given, I think, some key components of critical race theory. The idea of group identification being key to explaining social dynamics. It's a conflict view of society. And in light of that, there's no respect for freedom of speech, no respect for the free market that's supposedly slanted to benefit white people. And then when the arguments are made, they would appeal to discrepant outcomes and then say, well, that must be because of racism. It's what's called a univariate analysis. And when you look at social groups and social outcomes, according to income, profession, so many things, you've got to consider multiple variables that contribute to the outcome. Someone that I quote repeatedly in the book is a tremendous social scientist named Thomas Sowell, who is an African-American man. He's now, I think, 92, still writing and still publishing. So you've got to challenge this epistemology. It's called standpoint epistemology. And one thing I want my readers to realize is that the fire in the streets we saw in 2020 was due to an ideology. The fire was in the streets because there was fire in the minds of men and women who hold something like what I've just talked about, this critical race theory. You've got to fundamentally transform and tear down the system. Supposedly, America is based on slavery. Its wealth is due to slavery. Slavery continues to disadvantage people of color, the heritage of slavery. So we have to have reparations, which means that people of color, particularly blacks, need to receive a certain amount of money simply because their ancestors were oppressed and this has disadvantaged them in the economic world and so on. So it is a big, very powerful ideology, and I think it's really wrong at the root of it.
Many have written about critical theory in the past several years. How does approaching this ideology philosophically offer fresh insights into its nature and its dangers?
Right. I am a philosopher. I've been teaching philosophy full-time for almost 30 years. So I've written about how we know things, epistemology, rationality. I've worked in the area of social ethics and so on. So what I want to do is explain to people that ideas have consequences. And when you see somebody torching a fire or torching a police station or turning over cars or saying defund the police, this doesn't come out of nowhere. Now, obviously, the occasioning event 2 years ago was the death of George Floyd, and we were all horrified by that. But the way it's interpreted for critical race theory is that George Floyd died at the hands of white oppression, at the hands of white supremacy. So we've got to destroy the whole system that allows for something like his death through the agency of a white policeman. But one thing in terms of the facts on the ground here is that racism was never brought into the trial. The issue was whether or not what he did was within the protocols of the police and whether he was responsible for a criminal act. And even Keith Ellison, who is a senator in Minnesota, said, we didn't pursue the racial angle. The issue was whether or not the officer committed a crime against this person he was restraining. So if you have this big picture of white supremacy, white privilege, and so on, then you don't really have to look at the facts on the ground. So I go back and I consider the roots of this idea in Marx and Engels. So I quote the Communist Manifesto. I quote other writings by Marx. The essence is that history is a matter of conflict. And for Marx and Engels, it was primarily class conflict or economic conflict. The critical race theory people still talk about the oppressors and the oppressed, and that society is about conflict between groups. But their major categories are race and gender, not as much economics. However, as I show in the book, critical race theory has to be against the free market because that allows for quite a bit of freedom in terms of providing goods and services and the setting of prices and so on. And the neo-Marxists think that that's a setup to disadvantage people of color. So to be anti-racist or to follow critical race theory, you have to destroy a free market system and have the state in charge of equitable outcomes. Now, the more conservative view, and I think the more commonsensical view, is that we ought to allow for equal opportunity and fair rules of engagement and let people achieve according to their abilities and opportunities. But that is not the view that comes out of Marxism or neo-Marxism. So I'm trying to get to the root of it in terms of the ideas, the worldviews, and then how do these ideas play out in the streets? How do they play out in the political realm and so on?
Dr. Doug Grotheis is our guest. He's author of the forthcoming book, Fire in the Streets, How You Can Confidently Respond to Incendiary Cultural Topics. We'll get to the philosophical origins of critical theory right after this.
About destruction, don't you know that you can count me out?
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century.
O come, O come, Emmanuel.
The 16th century.
Lord, keep us steadfast in your will. Help us to what you seek to
see. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, etc.
Times of war have caused people throughout history to ask questions about the existence of God and the existence of evil. And yet we must confess that even amidst the terrors of war, God remains God. Nothing happens that he does not, at the very least, allow. If you've wondered these very things, especially as you've watched the war in Ukraine, you might find some of the answers you're looking for in the June-July issue of the Lutheran Witness, Church and State in a Time of War. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe, or our website witness.lcms.org to learn more. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
From the time of Moses, 3,500 years ago, the Church has been adorning her sacred spaces at the instruction of the Lord. Ad Crucem seeks to continue this tradition to the best of our ability as we create beautiful things to point us to Christ crucified for sinners. See our posters, greeting cards, artwork, and banners, each proclaiming the good work that our Lord has done for us. Visit adcrucem.com. That's ADCRUCEM.com.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the philosophical roots of critical theory with Dr. Doug Grotheis, professor of philosophy at Denver Seminary. Dr. Grotheis, you mentioned Marxism, but go into a little more detail on the philosophical origins of critical theory.
Right. Well, as I said, we can go back to Marx and Engels, certainly. And then this was developed through a school called the Frankfurt School in the 30s in Germany. And there are people like Herbert Marcuse and Max Horkheimer and others. And they left Germany to flee the oppression of Hitler. And they came to the United States and found domicile here and have found freedom of speech and opportunities. And they began to expand on the Marxism. See, they thought they needed to revise Marxism because all of Marx's predictions failed. He thought that countries that had capitalism would reach the point where the workers would revolt against the owners, the bourgeois, and create some kind of a socialist system. But that actually never happened the way Marx and Engels had predicted it. When you think of the United States, let's say in the 1950s and 60s, a lot of the workers are fairly happy. Even if they're not making a huge amount of money, they don't want to bring down the whole system. They think they still have opportunities and possibilities. So people like Marcuse and others said, well, we need to convince them that they are still very oppressed. So we've got to talk about other aspects of oppression, like racial oppression and the oppression of gender minorities and so on. Now, if you go back, let's say, to the 1960s or 50s in the United States, certainly African Americans and others didn't have the opportunities and the possibilities they ought to have. But my approach in the book is that the American system fundamentally, essentially, is sound, and it's also a self-reforming system. So the Constitution allowed for slavery. It actually did not endorse slavery. It was a compromise document between the Northern and the Southern states. But the Constitution allows for amendment. So it can be amended to, for example, outlaw slavery and to give equal protection and equal rights to members of all groups, to all citizens. See, the critical race theory perspective that developed out of Marxism is not about reforming the American system, which is a system of a republic that the government should be accountable to the people, and that's laid out in the Constitution, and that people have certain inherent rights that are given by God. That's in the Declaration. But see, the Marxist perspective is you're either an oppressor or an oppressed. And if you're oppressed, your view is correct. You take no prisoners. You have to overturn the system that allowed you to be oppressed in the first place. So with people like Marcuse, the idea was that the system is still hopelessly corrupt. People are oppressed. People are estranged from their true identities. But we've got to teach them how this works. So if you are an African American or some other racial minority, or if you are a homosexual or a lesbian, then the whole system is stacked against you, and the system itself has to be overturned in order for you to receive justice. So that's how it developed. Essentially, the Marxist predictions failed, and people were in these advanced industrial societies not chomping at the bit to overturn the oppressors. So the people that still held on to Marxism said, well, we need to update the theory to tell them how they are oppressed and to show them that the traditional American way of freedom of speech and peaceable assembly and freedom of religion and so on is not a system we want to work within. We actually want to overturn it. So when you look at a lot of the riots and the speeches and the books coming out of the 1960s and the demonstrations, especially on college campuses in the United States, but also in Europe, the idea was not let's reform things according to the best of the American ideal, but we need to destroy things. And that ethos, that passion for destruction, was very much in evidence in the race riots of 2020 around the United States. And those were the worst racial riots in the history of the United States. This resulted in billions of dollars of property destruction, the destruction of public buildings like police stations, many, many businesses, including small businesses owned by blacks, were destroyed. I think over 20 people were killed. People were terrorized, injured. And it was all based on a view of society that I think is fundamentally wrong and not good for the country. So having lived through that and given what I know about philosophy and about Marxism and American history, I thought I need to write a book that just goes to the root of this and not only says that critical race theory is not the way to go, is not a workable, true, rational philosophy, but give an alternative. So throughout the book, I defend these historic and American ideals of the fact that we are a republic, we have rights given to us by God, and the government should secure those rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which really means virtue, according to the founders. And our system of constitutional civil government is not perfect, but as one writer said years ago, find a better country. No, it's not perfect. We can't compare American civilization to the new heavens and the new earth and come off very well. But in light of the vast history of the human race and the kind of civil governments we see around the world, the American system really works quite well if you give it a chance to work in light of its founding ideals. And critical race theory does not have that kind of respect.
You spoke earlier about equity. What are the goals of critical theory?
Well, the goals seem to be to, first of all, tell the oppressors that they are part of the problem simply because they are male or they are white or they are heterosexual, and to deprivilege that position and say you need to give equal respect and equal empowerment to other kinds of people. And for example, you shouldn't say that monogamous marriage is the right way to be in the world, or this is based on some kind of transcendent authority from God. You should really realize there are various ways of being human and there are various sexual arrangements. They should all be tolerated. And if you're not tolerating them, you are being homophobic or transphobic or something like that. And another part of this whole agenda is to destroy the free market system and destroy freedom of speech as we've understood it historically. And you find some people on the left, like Alan Dershowitz, who are not conservatives, and he is not a Christian, who think that critical race theory is debasing and corrupting our whole system of speech and civil government and so on. So I have a whole chapter called Ideology and Free Speech, where I talk about the approach that says that we don't want free speech because the people on the other side are part of a intrinsically, inherently corrupt system, and we don't need to hear what they say. We don't want to hear what they say. So we simply have to dominate. It's like the supposed oppressed have to now dominate the oppressors. They have to confess their privilege. And you might remember in 2020, these scenes of many white people getting on their knees before African Americans and confessing their participation in this systemically unjust system. And what it does, instead of viewing the responsibility as resting on the person, the particular white, yellow, brown, whatever person, to work within the law and to love your neighbor as yourself. The idea is that if you are part of a particular group, a particular pigment group, or if you're male, then you just by virtue of being who you are on the wrong side, and you have to defer to the viewpoint and the demands of people that your group has supposedly oppressed. Now, I'm not against the idea of talking about systemic injustices. We certainly had those in the United States for a very long time. And the system we now have, of course, is not perfectly equitable or fair to everyone. But I think denying, for example, that the civil rights movement was a great gain for African Americans is absurd. And people who are really promoting critical race theory will say that the civil rights movement didn't advance the African American cause that much. And it really ended up benefiting white people more than blacks. You have people like Derrick Bell who said things like that. And I look at that as historically implausible. And many things I'm concerned about with critical race theory is that it's a program of total grievance, endless grievance, that if minority groups, people of color experience any kind of hardship, the immediate variable you go to is racism. Ibram X. Kendi is very clear about that in his book, How to Be an Anti-Racist. And that's just a very shallow, narrow, univariable, you might say, analysis. There are lots of reasons why various groups, ethnic groups or otherwise, are represented differently in terms of the professions or education. And if you're talking about 1950 America, when Jim Crow was still in place, some of those discrepancies could certainly be accounted for in terms of bad laws, unjust laws against people of color. I mean, we had anti-miscegenation laws in the United States. So people of two different races could not legally marry in many of the states. And that was overturned, I believe, in the mid-1960s. We find a lot more interracial marriage now. It's increasing, in fact. I did some research on this. And that, I think, is a good sign, too, that racism overall is abating. It's ebbing. But the critical race theory people, the approach, blames everything on racism. And even if your motives are not bad, you're still, if you're white and if you're male, you're part of an oppressive class. And so you simply need to defer to people who are different from yourself racially or to sexual minorities or gender minorities. And that's the end of it. There's really no place for a rational discussion, no place to talk about how history is played out or how economic programs play out. And what I'm trying to do in my book as a philosopher is say, wait a minute, I think as human beings, we have the ability to reason. It's God-given. And let's try to reason well together about these issues. And let's try to avoid the posturing and the grandstanding on any side of this issue. Let's really figure out what we think is best for society, what honors everyone made in the image and likeness of God, what social philosophy takes seriously the fact that we are all sinners and fallen short of the glory of God. We all have a penchant for selfishness and self-promotion. And I think that the American system of the Declaration, which is the why of America, and then the Constitution, which is more the how of America, provides us a tremendous foundation and framework for working out these issues. And we don't want to torch the whole system because we still have unrest and injustice. And that's what we saw in 2020. And this is why I wrote this book.
Dr. Doug Grotheis is our guest. We're talking about the philosophical roots of critical theory. He's professor of philosophy at Denver Seminary. On the other side, how has critical theory manifested itself in activist groups and movements? Thanks to our beloved on-demand listeners, Issues Etc. consistently ranks among the top podcasts in religion and spirituality. You can help us climb the charts by subscribing, rating, and reviewing Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit the subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for podcast listeners to find Issues Etc. Help us cast Christ's net on the internet Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. today.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues Etc.
We desire for all Christian children, including those with learning or behavior challenges, to receive a strong education in the faith. At simplyclassical.com, you will find reading, penmanship, and copybook exercises based on the truth, wisdom, and comfort of God's Word. We include Aesop's Fables and classic children's literature, math, and science, all from Memoria Press. Use promo code LPR22 at simplyclassical.com.
Did you know that many LCMS military personnel and their families are unable to receive Word and Sacrament ministry due to the lack of LCMS chaplains? Ministry to the Armed Forces is looking for pastors who will answer the call to serve as a chaplain to provide Word and Sacrament ministry to the men and women who selflessly serve our nation. Find out more about this exciting ministry by contacting me, Chaplain Craig Mueller, at lcmschaps@lcms.org. That is lcmschaps@lcms.org.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
The roots of critical theory is our topic. Dr. Doug Grotheis of Denver Seminary is our guest. This is Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Church and State in a Time of War is the theme for the latest issue of the Lutheran Witness magazine. You can receive an annual print and digital subscription for less than $20. Learn more at cph.org/witness or by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040, the Lutheran Witness magazine. Dr. Grotheis, you have mentioned some of these groups already, but how has critical theory manifested itself in activist groups and movements?
Well, it certainly does in the Black Lives Matter movement, as I mentioned. And we're finding out now that that group was very corrupt. They did not account for their money properly. But they have this systemic view of injustice. So whenever blacks are disadvantaged, or whenever, let's say, a white police officer shoots a black man, racism has to be the explanation for that. And they will go to the streets and even tolerate looting and so on for that end. The idea is that by any means necessary is a phrase that would be used for a lot of these folks. Things are so terrible, so unjust, so horrible. We have to use any means necessary. And Black Lives Matter received tens and maybe hundreds of millions of dollars in 2020. I don't know the exact figure. I think partially because people were desperate, that they thought this group sounds terrific. They want to do something about crime among black folks and police brutality and violence. You know, let's just throw money at Black Lives Matter. And people didn't realize they admitted, the leadership admitted to being trained Marxists. And when you say trained Marxist, that means an activist. Someone who wants to bring down society, not just an academic who teaches Karl Marx was right. So Black Lives Matter is a key group, a key activist group that was behind a lot of the rioting, to a lesser extent maybe, but there's a very militant, more of an anarchistic group called Antifa that was behind a lot of the violence. It's short for anti-fascist, but they would be in many ways similar to the critical race theory perspective.
How has critical theory become incorporated into many of our public schools?
Well, it can be incorporated through the way history is taught more implicitly. Now, it's one thing to say America has a racist past. It's another thing to say it is still systemically racist, such that people of color do not have an equal opportunity and so on. Sometimes it's just taught outright, like, what racial group are you from? And if you're part of the white race, then you need to, what they say, confess or admit your privilege, that simply by being white, you've been given unfair advantages over other people, and you need to feel bad about that. Maybe you need to take a knee, as they say. And a part of this also, as I mentioned, is the identification of racism with the free market, or the identification of racism with freedom of speech and things like this. So there are ways of teaching American history or social science, social studies, that can incorporate all these ideas without necessarily coming out and saying, we got these ideas from Herbert Marcuse or from Angela Davis, but nevertheless, the ideas are functioning within the curriculum. They don't have to be overt. It's not like we're having a unit on critical race theory, but it's incorporated into history, into social sciences, and so on.
How do you evaluate critical theory in light of a Christian worldview?
Well, I don't think it's compatible with a Christian worldview at all, because biblically, there's one God, one human race, two genders, and the fall and redemption made possible through Jesus Christ. So biblically, there's no emphasis on one race being better than another. All human beings are made in the image and likeness of God. We're all sinful, and we all need to be redeemed. So I think Christianity has a strong sense of individual accountability and responsibility. And it's realistic that groups can form in order to oppress other groups. And that has happened in the United States. Scripture says, don't follow a multitude in doing evil. So we don't determine right and wrong or good and evil by majority vote or by our skin pigmentation or by our gender. We determine what is right and wrong ultimately through what the Scripture teaches. And we put that into effect by evaluating this and conforming our conscience to what is objectively true. And in fact, the critical race theory introduces a lot of unnecessary antagonism between racial groups by thinking that people of one race are always the oppressors and members of another race are always the oppressed, that racism is normal, and we have to completely upend the system to address it. I think biblical view is more of individual rights and opportunities, a limited civil government, because the civil government, the state, is not God. And moreover, and this is very important, a biblical view is not utopian. It doesn't believe that by changing laws and changing structures, you're going to be able to completely eradicate injustice or racism or pettiness or anything else. So you don't want to aim for something that's impossible. And in the United States, you definitely don't want to try to fundamentally transform the whole system, because that means the system is intrinsically bad. It's wrong. People say that slavery is the original sin of the United States, and we can really never get completely over it. Or the only way to try to get over it is to enforce this equity top-down program, where if people don't advance the way we think they should in a free market with freedom of speech, then we will find other ways from the top down to make sure that these things happen. And I don't think that that is fair. I don't think that is conducive ultimately to human flourishing.
Nonetheless, some have attempted to incorporate critical theory into Christian theology. Is this possible? Does Christian theology survive the attempt?
Well, I don't think so. What some people will say is, we know the Marxist roots of critical theory. Marx was an atheist. Marx wanted revolution and so on. But we can use this neo-Marxist view as a critical tool or an analytical tool to diagnose what's wrong in society. But we're not going to take on the whole atheistic, materialistic worldview. Well, it's not simply an analytical tool. It's a ideology of life. It's a whole worldview. And it's based on non-Christian assumptions about the human person, about human arrangements, about history, and everything else. And the idea of using Marxism, or let's say neo-Marxism, as an analytical tool actually comes from a Black liberation theologian by the name of James Cone, who was essentially a Marxist and not an Orthodox Christian. So I don't think it gives us any tools of analysis that are helpful, because it views things in terms of systems, and it's very much a either or kind of dualistic account of society dividing up by race. It tends to fall into the univariant account of things, that racism is the causal factor of any injustice or any discrepant outcomes, which may not be unjust at all. So I don't think there is anything really good to retain. I think Christians need to be aware and alert about racial difficulties and animus, and every Christian should be concerned about crime rates among African Americans and the fact that African Americans are aborted at a far higher rate than other races, other women of other races. So we need to be very concerned about how any member of any group in the United States is treated in terms of fairness under the law. We need to be concerned to evangelize everyone. But really, with critical race theory, there's no redemption. It's simply an endless process of the oppressors oppressing the oppressed and the oppressed trying to fight back against the oppressors. And there's really no resolution to any of this. Now, there's not going to be a full resolution of the injustices of the human race until the second coming, but we can at least try to have something like a level playing field, have a situation where people could advance according to merit and give people opportunities to be free in their speech and be free in their economic relationships and so on. But critical race theory sees a problem, it misdiagnoses the reason for the problem in most cases, and then it recommends a change in the whole system that would not bring about a better social outcome. So I really don't see anything beneficial in critical race theory for the Christian who's trying to be a force for good in the world. I think the issues it brings up need to be addressed, but the way that it analyzes them, the way it attempts to address them, I find to be just false, irrational, and unhelpful.
Dr. Doug Grotheis is professor of philosophy at Denver Seminary. He's author of the forthcoming book, Fire in the Streets, How You Can Confidently Respond to Incendiary Cultural Topics. You can pre-order this book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Dr. Grotheis, thank you very much.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed it.
Tuesday on Issues Etc., we'll discuss the annual meeting of the Southern Baptist Convention with Bob Smetana of Religion News Service. We'll talk with Brian Brown about how same-sex marriage advocates are pushing for post-Roe protections. And we'll have Pastor Tom Baker lead us in a Sunday school lesson on Paul's letters to Timothy. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
I am beautiful because I am fearfully and wonderfully made.
I am accepted because I'm a part of His family through Jesus' shed blood.
Unity Lutheran School in East St. Louis, Illinois, shines the light of Christ in one of the most impoverished cities in America. Learn how to support their mission work at unityesl.org. Unityesl.org.
Today, with the help of the Holy Spirit, I say yes to God in His ways.
Trinity Orchard Farm is settled between two rivers showing the way to the water of life. For worship that is reverent, relevant, and refreshing like pure water, or for excellent education in a unique setting, check out our church and school. We're just 5 miles north of Highway 370 on Highway 94 in St. Charles County. Visit us on the web at trinityorchardfarm.com. That's trinityorchardfarm.com. Our phone number is 636-250-3350.